Film, Music, and Digital Entertainment Commission, overseeing our development of film, music, and especially digital entertainment, with a heavy emphasis on the virtual reality. In fact, the film tax credit that affects why we have so many films being made in Georgia now applies to virtual reality to productions as well. So if you are looking to start a VR studio in this country or in this world, not in some other world, let us know, because it's become a really advantageous time to start it in Georgia. So to my left is...
I'm Dave Moss. I am an investigative researcher at the Electronic... I am an investigative... It got shorter since my last panel. I'm an investigative researcher at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which means I tend to investigate new technologies. Often it's related to police surveillance, but I am super into VR now, and I have been since maybe like 3 years ago when I tried it at San Diego Comic-Con. At this point, I carry with me everywhere I go. This is the Ricoh Theta S, which is a 360-degree camera, and I hope to take a picture by the end of the session of everybody. And I also carry with me at all times now this little cardboard foldy steampunky looking plastic thing, so I can check my photos all the time, because it's not as easy to do it just by swishing around with your finger. Some of the things we get later in the presentation, I can talk about some of the privacy concerns that are coming up with VR and AR, and some of the ethical concerns as well that are going to be addressed.
My name is Ken Leitner. I'm a senior programmer at CCP Games. We just released Spark, which is a full-body VR simulation. It's more of a sport than a video game. You put on the helmet, and you're basically playing dodgeball in VR.
It's better than Tron. Yeah. So, what we see to our right is Vien. Introduce yourself as well.
Hello.
There you go.
Hi, guys. My name is Vin Ha. I run a virtual reality arcade called ICMU VR. So we're in Duluth. We've got 12 stations. Calm down, calm down.
One Duluth person.
We've got 12 stations.
Tucker.
What's that? We got 12 stations. We also develop software for the virtual reality arcade industry. We're pretty much trying to bring virtual reality across the country. As you know, probably virtual reality arcades are all over Asia, but if you look at the U.S., you really don't find them anywhere, and we're hoping to be able to change that with our software. One of the main reasons is commercial licensing, and hopefully our software will fix that and bring thousands of virtual reality arcades to the United States.
So. Can we get a round of applause for Ven hauling the whole system down here at 10 o'clock at night?
I wasn't planning this. I wasn't sure if I was going to be presenting, but these guys put me up for it.
So, Van, what's the Cheshire Cat playing right now? She's blowing something away.
Yeah, so she's playing a game called Space Pirate Trainer. So this is a first-person shooter game. You can see that right now she's using two guns. She's also got a shield on her back. I don't know if she knows it yet.
Ben, can you explain a little bit what the setup is here for people?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we have here is... HTC Vives, we've got two base stations here. These are not sensors as people think they are, tend to think they are. The sensors are actually in these controllers and the headset here. They're infrared sensors. These base stations here beam out lasers of infrared, and what happens is there's sensors on each of these dimples here you see, and it checks the delay between each of the sensors, and that's how it figures out where you are in space. And it's doing that at a very high frequency. So you really see no latency or very little latency, which is one of the most powerful things about VR that people don't know about. In the 90s, you had hardware problems, you had latency issues, but with the technology nowadays, I mean, when you're playing it, it's really like as if it's in front of you. And if you look left, it's kind of like as if you're looking left. I mean, it's pretty cool technology. It's one of those things you just got to try out to really know about. So,
excellent, excellent. So for tonight's panel, we wanted to address a number of things. One, we want to make sure everyone had a good chance to check out some of the latest in VR, though we're going to have to show Incursion and Spark at the end because they're not on that machine. We also wanted to talk about what we see on the horizon over the next few years, because it's very hard to predict VR out beyond more than 3 to 5 years. With Ken joining us on the panel and with the developer here, I'd love to get a little bit into the intricacies of VR development, if you don't mind. What's different from traditional game dev, what you have to keep in mind, and so forth. And then, for everyone's excitement, would love to dig into the ethical and privacy and legal ramifications of all the new technology. Since this is a discussion on an interactive technology, normally we would hold questions for the end, but if EFF doesn't mind, you are glad to take questions throughout as we go forward, running the box back and forth down the audience. All right. Maybe we'll draft the Cheshire Cat again. But So while we're watching the next person get a chance to blow things away, and hopefully
ping pong on that one.
I'm looking forward to the accounting simulator personally. That's what I'm waiting to show up here.
We don't know if it's downloaded.
Mike.
The thing with accounting is you got to hear the sound. It's one of those games where it's made from the maker of Rick and Morty.
I wasn't kidding. One of the best VR games is an accounting simulator.
It is hilarious. I mean. So
you're talking about Job Simulator.
But unfortunately, I don't think we have that downloaded on this laptop here today.
Good. Accounting's better.
But you can go to the arcade if you want to play.
So what you got?
All right. So first of all, I wanted us to talk about what we are very excited about right now and what we see on the horizon for the next 5 years. So Ken and I have both been going to the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco for decades. And we've been seeing VR in various manifestations since the early 90s, demoed there. And it was never in a really commercially feasible, more than a few people getting into it, form. And a few years ago, before Oculus had hit the market, right after they shipped their first dev kits, we had them come out to an event we do here in Atlanta called Siege, the Southern Interactive Entertainment and Game Expo. And I would love the idea of VR, but had yet to see anything that didn't make me physically nauseous and I thought was worth playing. And they introduced me for the first time to Epic Games' Bullet Train, which is not really a commercially released game. It's been their proof of concept on how to use the Unreal Engine that they've used for so many different games for VR. And it was the first time I had been in a VR game that I really enjoyed for about a half hour, no nausea, having a great time, physically engaged with the game because you're doing bullet time, dodging missiles, and all kinds of different things. The first time I saw VR as a feasible platform. And since then, we've been seeing games like this. We'll see accounting, I hope, tonight. Wonderful game. But in the next 3 to 5 years, what I'm getting more and more excited about are the is the insurance costs that come with having VR in your room.
I just want to add that happens like every hour at our office.
Speaker punching. It's not just for Nazis anymore. But what's excited me... Yeah. Go ahead.
You get in front of me. No one wants to see.
Yeah. It's all right. Go ahead.
The thing that's exciting me now is all the multiplayer VR that's starting to be developed. And this is where I think the next jumps will be. CCP Spark is a perfect example of how this is going to work. I think you're only two players so far, right?
There's four people in the arena and two people playing at
two
once.
Two people playing once,
Since it's a sport, you need to get out and take a break between matches.
Pshaw. They're not real gamers. Anyway, but we also work with a number of military sim and police sim developers in the state. And Georgia has some great ones. And most of them have been doing these 5 to 6 person simulations already using VR, but purely for training. And now they're looking to get into the entertainment market now that the technology is getting more and more spread, more and more installed users for the technology. So we've already been to places like Motion Reality here in Atlanta that do 6 versus 6 battles in a warehouse-sized area. And basically they've set up versions where your robots tromping around. You can see video of this on the Georgia Game Dev Georgia Game Dev's YouTube channel. It's Georgia Game Dev's. You'll see folks doing it. And it's incredible. It's 6 people destroying a city, blasting each other. It's almost the mech battles we wanted back when Mech Warrior was these giant rigs in some of the arcades. So the multiplayer aspect of it, getting people into the entire aspect of fighting, is incredible. So with that...
Sure. So I want to get away from games a little bit because I think that we'll get back to games. But I do think you have to look at VR and how it is going to fundamentally affect all the processes that we do in our workspaces, in schools. So to give you an example, there are medical schools now who are integrating VR into their anatomy programs. So what will happen is the students will go in, they'll look at the cadavers, they'll tear them apart, they'll cut them open. They'll come back later to try out a VR thing where they're looking at the same body or a similar body, but going really into the body to look at the organs really close up and move them around. I know I was speaking before I came to the panel with one of the game creators at Midboss in San Francisco, and he says he uses Tilt Brush, which is a painting game in VR, to map out the locations of what things are going to look like in the games he wants to build in the future. And if you can think about that with, say, engineering firms or architects who are used to making little, drawings of things, or they're building like little models of things that are sitting on a table. If you're able to, instead of have like a miniaturized version of the building you want to build, but an actual scale size of the building that you're going to build, or a scale building that's not only at scale, but you can shrink down if your hands if you want. I think we'll start to see that all over the place. In the way that people develop things, instead of drawing it out on paper or drawing it out on a computer, start doing it actually in simulations. And then as augmented reality comes around, which is a mix of what you're able to see in the real world with a headset layering onto it, we're going to hit a time where it becomes more effective to use that in your workplace instead of a laptop, that you're able to be more productive. And I think that's probably about 5-10 years out as well. And that's going to seriously change if you're not going into the office to use your computer, but you're going to the office to use a headset just to do clerical work. I mean, that's a fundamental change in how our society functions.
I guess I'm going to bring it back to games.
We win!
So,
well, let's get his comment.
What I think, do you want to do a question, Chris?
Hi. I just recently purchased an Oculus Rift, and I have a room scale VR set up in my living room now. And if you know anything about how the Oculus Rift drivers work, they have to be connected all the time to OSVR server. Mm-hmm. And so it just occurred to me after I set all this up that I now have three 3D cameras in my living room that are always connected to Facebook. And I don't even have a Facebook account. So, I mean,
it's not just the cameras. You have devices in your hands that are recording your body. They're recording your wingspan, the way you move, whether you're left-handed or right-handed, the way you move your head. It's like collecting data on your entire body on top of actually, looking at where you are.
We promised to get into the ethical and legal considerations.
We'll talk about it a little bit more. We got some more game stuff, but I got a lot to say about that.
Yeah.
It's an awful lot of data for us to just be collecting it.
Yeah. And Facebook doesn't collect data just to profit on it. They are mindful of all of your rights.
What were you going to say?
Okay, so Spark is coming out for PlayStation. Came out Tuesday, actually Tuesday. Probably wouldn't have gotten to go to Dragon Con except our ship date was a few days before. PlayStation VR. We're exclusive on PlayStation VR. We develop on Unreal, so it works on Oculus and Rift as well, but the market right now is definitely PlayStation. One of the biggest barriers as a business model is the price point is just too high right now. The Oculus, up until the last couple weeks, was $700 for the whole thing, and they dropped their price because they realized, I think, that PlayStation was kicking their ass. PlayStation has sold, I think, now twice as many units as Oculus and Rift combined.
Yeah, a million PlayStation VRs are installed versus what we see for Oculus. Now the question is, I mean, a lot of people bought them bundles. Who knows how many folks are actually using those?
Well, now that there's titles available.
Well, now that Spark's available, I'll grant.
I use mine all the time, and I'm kind of like a drug dealer now. I invite friends over, I'm like, going to blow your mind. And then you're going to have it all the time. And they're going to charge you. But just kidding.
Right, so the prices are coming down. The other big barrier is those sensors and that cable on the back of his head, and those are the things that are coming next, is inside-out tracking, so the tracking is built into the helmet so that you don't have to have the sensor around the room, because that's a big expense one of the reasons why the devices are so expensive. And then the cable on the back of your head keeps you from doing, moving around quite as much as you might want to. And lastly, you need a space, right? You need a space big enough to do this. Spark is pretty conservative with how much space you need. We kind of form a 3-meter circle where you can kind of dodge the ball in and out. Because PlayStation, if you go further than that, you're probably out of tracking anyway. The Oculus, obviously a lot better on that, but still that requires, not everybody's living room is set up for that, right?
If they have a living room.
If they have a living room.
We had a question back, then we'll go to Ven.
Yeah. My barrier actually isn't the cost. I'll pay any price. Maybe David could sympathize with me. My barrier is my glasses. When am I going to get a headset that I can wear lenses with that it doesn't hurt my nose or my ears?
That's why I have the PSVR, because a lot of these strap to your head like that, whereas the PSVR slides in over it, and it's not like goggles pulling against you. It's more like a poker visor or like a tennis hat where it pushes against here rather than here. So I can tell you that like I found that the PSVR is the best for me with glasses.
But it doesn't have the oomph that those rigs do yet.
It's pretty good, though. I have to say it's pretty good. It's pretty solid.
It has a single dual camera, so the tracking is a little bit more limited. But other than that, it's really good.
I mean, can we expect, custom lenses for people that have glasses? Or a custom goggle set for people that have vision problems?
So one of my other interests is drone flying. So anybody do remote FPV drone flying out there? So we put on very similar goggles, and they have diopter inserts for people with glasses so that you can get the same vision. So I don't know if that's coming to VR or not, but it's a thing in a bigger industry now.
Ben, how do you handle this at your shop?
So actually, to address that issue, we used to have these Velcro straps that you see here, but at our arcade, we actually use the deluxe audio straps. So it's a solution similar to the PSVR in that it slides in and it's much more comfortable, and the weight is shifted on your head as opposed to before with the Velcro strap, it's pushed onto your forehead and onto your glasses. Yes, you can absolutely buy that. It just released, I guess, about a month and a half ago in the United States. So it is available for consumer use.
I was going to start a Kickstarter campaign, but now that it's out,
hell with that.
So what was the question for the...
Oh, yeah, for Ven, do you want to go ahead and jump on what you're most excited about in the next 3 to 5 years for VR?
Oh, absolutely. So I think that VR right now, the biggest problem is, of course, everybody knows it, it's the price point, right? I mean, who here has their own headset at home? I mean, you guys take a look around. And who likes VR? I mean... You see a ton of hands, but nobody can afford it. It's so expensive. And I think, with time, of course, it's like the TV, the computer. Eventually, everything is going to drop down in price. And VR is, susceptible to that as well. And then, of course, go ahead.
Repeat the question.
What do I think is the right price point?
Sony's doing pretty well at $400, but it probably needs to be a little lower.
Yeah, Sony is definitely doing very well at $400, but with that, you still got to have the PS4. So that's, I don't know how much that is.
$250, $300 now, I think.
Well, right, but a PS4 is a lot cheaper than
a lot cheaper than this, right?
Than the PC you need to drive that. Yeah.
So if you want something like this, which is in my opinion, a higher quality VR experience, but it's going to cost you at least $2,000-$3,000. I mean, this laptop's not just a regular laptop. It's a laptop that has a really really good graphics card, and that's the thing that the industry is facing right now is the price point is way way too high, and the reason that is because mass economy has not taken place. That because a lot of people don't have VR, and so the market's not big, and so the economies of scale, having mass produce the parts, once you start mass producing, everything gets cheaper, but that just hasn't taken place. And so that's kind of where we hope to come in and fix, is we can introduce VR to people. The problem is people don't know what the technology is like, so they're not going to go out and buy it on a whim. You're not going to go drop $2,000 to go buy virtual reality, right? So we hope to be able to share that experience so that, you know, you're compelled to go out to the store and go buy it. Because that's how my experience was. My first time was, you know, this was about 7-8 months ago. I went to my friend's house and, you know, I tried the technology out and I had no idea what it was going to be like. Tried it out and it blew my mind away. 2 weeks later, I quit my job and worked on this. So.
Yay. All right, I just realized that the title of this is Virtual Reality and Augmented Reality. So very quickly, I'm going to do the same thing for AR, and then we'll go into some questions really quickly. And I do want to talk about development on both of these. So for augmented reality, the question is, again, what are you most excited about in the next 3 to 5 years? Don't say Pokemon Go, 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 Go. That's probably not the best thing. But it's been very interesting that while VR has really seen most of its popular success and I won't say not, and fame in the game arena, AR has gone the opposite route. It's gone a much more B2B, a much more business to business. So the HoloLens is the one I've practiced with the most. There are others out there. And Microsoft did a really fun game demo for it when they first started showing it off to developers. They had this fun little bugs coming out of the walls, and you shot them, and you're in your own room shooting at these robot bugs coming out of your walls. I exterminated the next day. But they've done a good job with it. But now where I'm mainly seeing it being utilized is in business, is in promotions. There's the Mercedes-Benz folks here in Atlanta have been using it to show off different versions of Mercedes-Benz, show how it's styled, how to develop it, and so forth. I've been seeing it used in marketing and on convention floors, and I'm seeing it used pretty heavily right now for training, which has been surprising me because there's good game applications, but I'm seeing very few of those right now. So the excitement for me for augmented reality is I think it will go a bit more B2C, a bit more into the consumer market with games down the line, because Pokemon Go has shown how successful that can be. We've shown that people are willing to adopt that bizarreness walking down the streets if there's a suitable reward for it, and I think more developers will start bringing that into reality augmentedly.
So I'm not really I'm not going to go with excited. I'm going to go with what's worrying me. I foresee that it's going to be something that police use, that we'll start seeing police wearing these devices all the time. And as they will be scanning the environment around them all the time, collecting data on everything they see, and then once they start applying facial recognition to them, I mean, we're talking about the type of science fiction where you're seeing through, like, the Terminator's eyes and there's stuff coming up. And I think that actually is the application that we'll start seeing in maybe about, you know, 10 years or so.
We kind of have if that now.
That actually is true. I think in Russia, they have a Facebook app. I think it's not Facebook, but it's
but we're still trying to record
it. Yeah,
we're
trying to record it, so.
We don't care if they can hear you. It's when I'm sober tomorrow if I know what you said.
Testing. Hello?
Okay.
So, actually, in Russia, they have something just like that.
Right, right. Can you throw the
technology!
Box, the orange box?
I mean, most of the things we have now, they're just not live in their eyeglasses. You know, they sit behind a radar gun on the side of the highway. It's the same thing, and there's a big question of where do we draw the line of what's AR and what's what we're all used to, right? I mean, is Google goggles, where you can point your phone at a product in a store and get the online price? Is that AR?
As opposed to just being a big custom QE scanner. Yeah. I tend to think it's when we project things on top of it. It's not just I'm gathering data. It's that I'm putting something on top of it and so forth. But that's a good question, because the AR folks have a very broad definition of what is AR. Anything that they think they can make money on is suddenly considered AR. So we'll see those exact applications. I'm looking at you, and I now know your entire life's history. We'll fall into that category, absolutely. So, yeah, definite interesting part of it. And the big joke is that'll be what drivers will do when they've got a self-driving car. They'll be doing the augmented glasses, checking out every the driver. So, did you have something on AR other than we're already being scoped by the government? Oh, sorry, I forgot that we were still technologizing.
Hello?
Hi. Yeah, I think that AR is going to be very big, if not bigger than virtual reality. It's something that, you know, I see that virtual reality kind of struggles one thing, and that's you're occluded. I mean, when you put the heads on, you can't see the other person. And there's, a lack of social presence. With AR, that kind of fixes it, because if I'm looking at you, I still see you. I just see, you know, maybe some segments of virtual reality with it or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of questions. As we get to the questions, show of hands on this. Are you more interested in development issues for VR and AR? Raise your hands if that's what you're really interested in. Or are you more interested in moral and ethical issues? And morals might be winning. Seems kind of an even split.
We'll cover both. Yeah.
All right, let's dive into a few questions because some hands have been going up, a lot of hands have been going up, and then we'll get into development issues.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, all right. I actually have a question with the, this is kind of semi-off topic, but on topic at the same time, with the development of quantum computing technology and increasing of the amount of computation power we can bring out with the broadband frequencies being increased with the amount of data travel we can put across the globe as a whole, do you see these haptics going more away from self-computation to a broader cloud computation?
Actually, I just read something about that the other day. They had something where, I can't remember the name of it, but they're pushing the graphics computation online.
Right.
And so now with that, that brings a lot of capabilities. So at home, you know, if you have your computer idle and it's just sitting there, you can sell it kind of like Bitcoin, right, where you're mining, right? But instead of mining, you are providing computational, you know, stuff for VR, or whether it be for VR or media or whatever. That is definitely coming, and I've seen something out there for that.
In addition, it's not just developers wanting that. It is that Microsoft and Amazon are pushing that, and they're going to make it more accessible than doing it on your own. It's going to become easier and easier to have it handled basically off-site. And this is one of the issues we're going to talk about on the moral and ethical front of it. We already have a digital divide. We already know how significant that is. What do we happens when we add this price point on top of it and make that even more extensive, when what Dave's talking about, where this is important for work, this is important for education. I mean, right now, we have kids who can't afford books, and now they have to get their textbooks online and have to access their textbooks online. So if they have broadband issues, they can't even do their homework to begin with. Now we're going to add a virtual component to it they have to worry about. We're starting to force an even larger and larger digital divide. So we'll deal with that later.
And I want to add to that. That is a threat. Because, you know, virtual reality, I just had our arcade, we did an educational program where we hooked up with a professor, and it was a professor, and then we hooked up with a whole bunch of schools around, you know, the country and around the world, and we had a virtual professor teaching the whole classroom. And so maybe in the future, you might not be traveling to school anymore. You might be at home listening and watching your professor teach you. I mean, that's the...
Well, it's more than that, because if you're doing a lab with a teacher and you don't have to be there, you are there virtually. But if you don't have the technology, you don't have the broadband, you don't have the connectivity, you've got to somehow then be there physically, and schools are becoming less and less, going to be less and less equipped for that.
Yeah, or if your teacher wants to tell you about, you know, the belts of Africa, they can take you there right there, and then hopefully Ray Bradbury is not going to come and, you know, haunt you with lions jumping out of VR and eating you.
I have a much more optimistic view. You could get a Chromebook for a couple $100 now. I mean, it's way cheaper than this.
But there are big chunks of Georgia where you don't have the internet.
I mean,
to make that
usable. When it comes to a textbook and doing your homework, you can use dial-up. It'll work just fine.
Oh.
or go to a school. The notion of VR in an arcade, I love it, makes sense, the model makes sense. But in the year 2010, 4.2 million 3D televisions were sold in 2010 alone. That technology is dead. Now you had Hollywood turning out 3D movies, high quality content backed by hundreds of millions of dollars of an industry, tech is dead. 24 million Kinects sold, dead. Why is VR different? Why is there this idea that VR will somehow penetrate the consumer market and bring it into the home as opposed to business, arcades, things like that?
I think all of us want to jump on that one.
Yeah, so honestly, the reason I'm waiting to get my home VR set, in addition to the fact that I spend 8 hours a day in it, is the technology is going to roll over a lot in the next few years.
The big one for me is that applications are going to change dramatically. Now, I mean, so you talked about the 3D TV. I don't have a TV. Who here? Okay, let's say who has a TV here still? It'll be the majority of the people here, but a lot less than you would have expected before. TV in general is getting less popular until they ship smell-o-vision with it. It's gone. But the applications for VR, like you're talking about, education, training, occupational, it's going to be used for interviews and so on, you're going to see that develop so it becomes more like your home computer than like your TV. It is not just an entertainment device, unfortunately.
I got one word for that, immersion. I think that 4D, you're not going to get immersion. Kinect, I mean, you're playing in front of it, but do you really feel like you're there? And with virtual reality, I kid you not, when you put that thing on, you feel like you're playing the game. I mean, I was playing Onward one time, and I was crouched down on the floor, and this guy comes running in, and I try to shoot him, and I forget that I didn't load my gun. So I stand up, and I run into my wall, because I forget. because I forget that I'm in a game. And that's the difference. The TV is not going to provide that. The Kinect is not going to provide that.
Yeah, please turn off your cell phone to burn the
mountain. I'll jump in while he's answering that.
That was me telling you guys to turn off your cell phones, please.
A common thing that happens at work is you get so immersed in the reality, you go to put your controllers down on a virtual surface and then just drop it on the floor. You're like, wait, what happened?
You know, I mean, you hear stories about when they first, did the first motion picture and it was a train coming towards the screen and people were just freaking out and running out of the movie theater because they thought a train was coming at them. And you have this experience sometimes with people trying it for the first time. There's often these games that will have you on a height, like on a building or above a pit, and they tell people, step off of it. And there are people who can't do it. They can't do it because it is actually like so real.
I was one of them.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I don't think you get that fear of heights with a 3D movie or something like that. I mean, you really have to, like, at this point, you have to really push the boundaries of horror to really even get a scare out of people with a 3D movie. I think the immersion, the getting lost in there, the having, you know, like, you are actually in a space and everywhere you look, there's no looking away, there's no looking at your phone. I mean, one of the things that I do is I spend way too much time on my phone checking my email. And right now, the only time that I'm not doing that is when I'm sleeping or I'm in VR, because you cannot check your text messages, your Twitter, your Facebook when you're in VR, at least until they install that into my PSVR.
Not yet.
And another thing is, I guess, you know, Andrew, you mentioned the applications. You know, the Kinect is playing video games, right? The TV is, you're watching entertainment. But with VR, what you can do is limitless. I mean, you can watch TV. You can do that. I mean, imagine I have, think about this. Right now, I have 3 monitors set up at home. I could put the headset on, get rid of all the monitors, and I've got 4 monitors or monitors all around
360
me.
Monitors.
360 monitors. I can do so much.
For working
education.
On games. Oh man, just the idea of working on it, where I'm all around it, and I'm not having to go over there, look at that screen, over that screen. Where have I hidden that window? I'm just constantly rotating my head.
Yeah, and this camera really did change it for me as well, because I mean, my point and shoot, it's now at the point where the pixels are so high that I can't tell the difference between a 40 megapixel camera and a 20 megapixel camera. This thing, I'm like, I take pictures and I'm like, when I am in my 80s and I'm starting to lose my memory, I'm going to be glad I took these 360 photos. And my grandkids are going to look at it and be like, oh, these are so quaint. Oh my gosh, it's so two-dimensional. But really, it's the photos I take. I mean, I took some last year in the Marriott over on the bar platform,
the
sort of thing.
Floor.
Yeah, no, not the 10-4, on that, just
oh,
that, that.
Oh, right, the Pulse right. Bar, yeah.
Yeah, the Pulse Bar. The and I take that home loft, and I show people loft. To it just on my phone with the goggles. I mean, I have way more people at work who want to come represent EFF at DragonCon since doing that, right? Like, and you try to take the same a photo that is as representative of what DragonCon is with your iPhone or with any other camera, and it will, like, pale in comparison. You can spend, you know, bring in a $5,000 DSLR, and I guarantee my camera will impress people more.
And I'd like to go into the applications again, because we're not just talking about the applications that will be here in 5 years. These applications are already here. There's a company called Virtually Better that's been in Atlanta for a decade using VR to treat PTSD and other psychological issues and doing it successfully and with pretty well-documented success. There are folks who've been using it for training, who've been using it for education for a while already and are absolutely convinced of the value thereof. So...
Yeah, I mean, the military stuff is cool. I mean, like, mm-hmm. one of the biggest problems that the military always tries to address is how to train people to react in, like, traumatic situations. How do you, you know, I mean, this is why there's all sorts of controversy about using live pigs to train army medics, like, because how else are they going to get experience with squirting blood and screams
fighting
and all
patients.
That sort of stuff in fighting patients? And they want them to try it before they go out in the real world. And so they design all these dummies and things, but using something like VR to help have these experiences and sort of inoculate them against them or to try it out can actually be really, really, you know, any of these other systems are not anywhere close to those kind of applications.
So Andrew, when you went to Motion Reality, did they hook the shock band up to you?
I did not do the shock band. They do the shock band to people. So, yes, you're in a military police training sim, and if you're shot, you feel it. Oh, man, they zap you. No, I did not do that part of it. But, yeah, and this is already in place. I mean, you are having the full experience. If you're shot, you're shot. And you really know it right there. And they do have different levels of it. So if you really like the shock, you can go full on. But, yeah, and you see.
I can't believe you'd pass that up.
Hi. One thing that hasn't been covered, or only in passing, is the fundamental issue of nausea. That there, it seems that no matter what the technology advances, I mean, 4 million years from now, the inner ear is still going to be a problem. And this is not a problem for a lot of these applications, but for like the dream of sitting on your sofa with a controller playing, some 3D.
Our HoloDeck is still going to make us sick.
It's still going to make us sick no matter what you do.
So there's a lot of work going into dealing with that right now. One of the biggest things and one of the things that drives cost is you have to have an extremely high frame rate. You know, 60 frames per second minimum, and they really want you to be 90 or higher. And that has to be all the time. And so we spent a lot of time optimizing menu screens that we would have never bothered optimizing before because they have to be 60 frames per second all the time.
And
the other thing is figuring out how to move people, because you can put the VR strap on and you can walk around in real life and we can simulate you moving around in virtual space and you won't get nauseous. But if I try and move you like you would in a first-person shooter, you're going to get nauseous really fast. And that's an outlying problem that has not been solved yet.
Yeah, I can't do space games. I just can't do anything where there's
you
no up
and down. You actually can. So, yeah, I get nauseous really quick in VR, and that's why I love the idea, I have not thought it worked for decades. Now there are games that do it a lot better. Again, they don't move you around that much. If they move you around, I've got John Gibson is the president of Tripwire. He did Incursion. He talks about games that make him sick. If you have to jump or fly, he just throws the headset off. I mean, he'll throw his Oculus across the room. But we actually represent a company called Pulseworks here in Georgia that does space rides as their VR product, and they have them there in Space Museum, and I can ride these all day, because what they do is they have a physical simulator that ties into the VR experience, and it's incredible. There is no nausea. There's none of that experience, and you are physically moving while your avatar, while you are moving in the VR, and that's the only way I can move in VR and not start feeling nauseous.
We are used to certain similar simulations. Like, if you sit in a car, you're not walking around on your own, and that took, you know, humans a little getting used to, but we got used to it. And I find the same thing drone piloting. If I sit down and put the goggles on, I can fly all over the place and not get nauseous, but it did take a little bit of getting used to. So some of it's going to be getting used to it. Some of it is going to be on the developers to do better things. Some of it is, there's some technology now dealing with your peripheral vision and how that relates to your movement. Part.
I think Ubisoft has, with their Eagle Flight, I mean, I think they narrow it down, and then they have these little leaves that come out you to help you focus. So, you know, they're trying different things.
I definitely think that, you know, locomotion is a big issue, and it's a challenging issue that's going to take a long time to, you know, find a solution. But
you get, will it ever be solved?
Can you repeat the question?
He asked, will it ever be solved? I can't tell you that, but I know that the industry is new, and a lot of developers are still, you know, experimenting, and they're figuring out which, you know, you can move through space a million different ways, right? Yeah. You can move through, as you described, if you're standing there and you try to move it, you'd feel motion sickness, but if you try to like teleport them, then you don't feel the same thing. Or if you try to like fade the screen, there's different processes that people are still experimenting with. And I think the industry is so new that yes, some people will experience motion sickness, but we're all still figuring out what's the best way to do it. And it will hopefully get a lot better. And it's one of those things, you know, when I tried VR for the first time, I played, I think, Rec Room, and I got motion sick. And it wasn't, I mean, after that, after the first time, I didn't get it again. I think your mind adjusts to it. And I think it's kind of like we got used to driving the car. I mean, that's a very good example. We got used to driving the car. This is one of those things that, okay, you're just going to have to get, hopefully you don't get sick, but you're just going to get used to it eventually. It's just be natural.
And I think that you also have to keep in mind that we're going to have, you know, the kids who are being born today, this is going to be something that's part of their lives. And it's not like us, you know, we're grown up and this is the first time we're trying it. And so we have a whole life of never having VR and suddenly having it. And then, you know, the next generation, they're going to start playing. Maybe it'll be like 13 or 14. I don't think we have a good age set on what it is, but it's going to be part of their lives. So,
and before we get to the next question, though, I do want to touch on development for a little bit. So dev for VR has changed dramatically the past few years. There are now engines, the same game engines that we use for regular 3D games, Unreal and Unity and others, are now being used for VR, which I find incredible, makes it so much easier for him to develop it. But there are still considerations you have to keep into account for VR. Ken pointed out one of the few I was going to point out, which was the high-res requirements. But there are some other things to keep in mind. You want to talk about some of the things you guys had to keep in mind for Spark?
I mean, I think we talked about some of it. The technology is really new. Unreal is catching up. We're a few months behind because we just got to release. We were on 4.15, and there was a lot of stuff that just not done yet, but there's a lot of stuff that was. I mean, it's a lot better to work with Unreal than to not work with Unreal, for sure.
Yeah, so one of the things I keep hearing developers talking about is the time that they want a person to be in the VR, what the VR experience needs to be. And we're still not talking about really prolonged experiences in VR. Ken talked about with Spark, they're doing a competitive game where you actually have a lot of physical motion. You've seen people here jumping all over the place. So I've heard a lot of developers talk about that 5 to 10 minute play experience that you then want to get back into. On the other hand, there are games like the accounting simulator, like Job Simulator, where I do see people 30 minutes, an hour. Well, you don't do an hour for accounting. That game's pretty quick. But like Job Simulator, you can go for a while. And Job Simulator is an incredibly good game. One of the things that is proving that VR can be a lot of fun. You don't have Job Simulator with you, do you? Oh, well. Check out the videos of Job Simulator. Check out the videos of the Accounting VR games. They're all absolutely hilarious. But that's one of the major things. We talk about on mobile, you have this like 3 to 5 minute play experience that you're driving. On VR, generally, I'm seeing 10 to 15 with 30 as the outlier. What are you seeing on that, Ken?
Well, it depends on the game. Spark is a physical game. You're moving around a lot, so our playtime is shorter. But people can get in the arena and do that rotation for long periods of time.
Anybody else want to try? We got a couple more. We can probably fit 2 or 3 more people in.
All right. And we do want to shoot through some of the more. Well, we've been also had the request. We don't have much more time, so we do want to hit on a few more issues. 10 minutes. So.
And everybody wants to see the Spark trailer, too, right?
And everyone wants to see the Spark trailer, so we got to get that loaded up after this. I did want to touch. We promised moral and ethical issues. So I did want to throw some of those out. One is, obviously, I talked about the digital divide concerns that I have. Two that already came up was the privacy issue. So we all know who owns Oculus. They bought it because they see it as a social platform. There are folks who are developing for social platforms for VR. There are companies here in Georgia that are working on that right now. And so obviously Facebook sees that as the next iteration of social. But there are a lot of concerns that this is a new way that they can track all sorts of metrics on you that they otherwise have no access to. If you're wearing the VR headset, so right now they know if you click on something on Facebook, they know if you tap on it, they don't know if you look at it. And that's what you start getting with VR. You're getting the eye tracking that they currently can't do. There's a lot more metrics that they can track that they're not already tracking. So this is where I'm usually hearing the privacy concerns on VR.
So I've met with VR people, and after a few minutes, I realize I have to shut up because I'm giving them ideas on how to violate your privacy.
We need all that information to make your experience better.
Yeah. I mean, the things that worry me, like I was saying before, I worry about the way that it's measuring your body and measuring the way you move. Right off the bat, your head movement, how tall you are, how your arms move, left, right hand. When they do eye tracking, it'll tell you a lot more. But I'm also worried about a new kind of biometrics that we really haven't seen around, and that's kind of like a reactive biometrics, where game developers or companies are going to be able to know what you're scared of. They're going to know how you react when somebody throws a punch at you. They're going to know that if there's a crowd of 10 people, of those people, which one are you going to find the most attractive on a regular basis? And that's data they can collect on you that isn't just like what are your reading habits, what kind of music you like, but things about how you interact with the world around you that they don't currently have. I don't think many of the companies that are working on this have really figured out how to monetize it yet. I think that there's a lot of investment being put in, and they're able to sell games, and they're able to sell game systems. I don't know that they've fully figured out how to start working advertising into that, but it's coming, and it'll be around soon, and it's going to be just as creepy, if not more so, than what we're seeing already on the internet.
We're focused mainly on just figuring out whether you've paid for the game or not.
And there's the other concerns. We talked about the immersion. There are concerns that we haven't done the research on it yet on how much can this influence your actual desires and likes. So there's classic studies on if people think that they're being watched, they're more likely to put money into the tip jar, that sort of thing. We know that happens. We know that you're behavior shortly after some experience is modified by that experience. And the feeling is that the immersion level you get with VR can force that it can push your behaviors just like we once feared that subliminal advertising would do. Research on this, I haven't seen anything conclusive yet, but we look at the work groups like Virtually Better are doing to actually change people's behaviors and change people's way of thinking. Possibilities are there, but they're doing it with trained therapists and the like as part of an overall regimen. The other big concern is on youth brain plasticity. How much is this going to impact it? We don't know. I don't hear that as a big concern, but I do hear folks for whom they feel that is going to be a major thing. What does happen when those kids who are going to grow up in VR are wearing this for 8 hours a day? How will that impact the actual brain?
And I think
those kids watching TV 8 hours a day, it's going to rot their brain.
Their jazz music and their poetry.
And I think from a... from a tech policy perspective at EFF, what I'm keeping an eye out for is that we're going to end up having the same fights and debates that we had in the 80s and 90s. There's going to be, you know, some sort of outcry over violent video games, and we're going to have congressmen, ooh, there's blood, oh, this is so, you know, this is making kids scared, and it's damaging them, and we're going to have to fight to make sure that, you know, for freedom of speech. Same is going to happen with the continued growth of VR pornography, which is certainly a engine driving the VR industry now, but certainly once members of Congress start getting worried about that, we're going to have to, like, go through some, you know, adult content battles again. So, you know, I mean, it's not so much an ethical issue, but it's more of a policy issue.
So the GGDA works closely with the Entertainment Software Association, and they are already hearing a lot of groups talking about VR regulations. So we know this is being bandied about. We just don't know what form the regulations will take when they get proposed. Okay, let's go ahead and start taking some questions.
Well, mine's actually on the opposite side of privacy and ethicals on it, because I bought my Oculus as a toy, and then it got converted into a work tool, because I work with private and confidential health data, which, if you don't know, means anyone who's not authorized and trained to use it sees it. I get sued or go to jail.
You're so HIPAA.
I am very HIPAA. So I need 4 screens that no one's allowed to see. And the only way I could figure out to do it effectively and efficiently is in a headset.
I don't know which headset you should be using.
So I used an Oculus, and now I can actually work in the office without having to worry about going to jail.
It's real interesting.
What you were talking about earlier.
Right here. There we go.
Right in front.
Should I stand? I don't know. So I specifically work with AR technology, and I know we didn't focus on that just as much, but one of my big questions is, what kind of technological setbacks would you see for AR currently? Specifically, where I'm coming from is the space industry. We're using it for high brightness environments for astronauts, and so when you have that high brightness, just like you take your phone outside on a sunny day, you can't see your screen. So what other technological versus like the brightness control do you see that are some setbacks?
One of the issues I see right now is that so far so much of the AR development is right here, which is not obviously a dedicated AR device. So we see HoloLens come out from Microsoft, starting to do some of that focus on and doing really good development. I'm a fan of the HoloLens. I think they've done a very nice job with that. But we're still in first iteration public HoloLens. The tech for AR is lagging behind, in my opinion, and isn't getting the focus because there's not that huge audience that we're seeing for VR right now. I think we are going to see a lot of the concern addressed, and my big issue is controls. I have such a limited functionality. If I'm not in a room that's set with sensors, there's so little I can do, and I'm more concerned with when do we address the actual issue of what can I do with that thing.
I think we have about time for the Spark. How long is the Spark
trailer? Okay.
While he's getting that ready, can I take a picture of everybody? All right. If you're not into it, just go. Rrr. All right, ready? 1, 2, 3. You can put the mic to it as well.
All right, so one question while we get Spark up.
All right, I'm going to close this.
Shout it out.
Sony was getting around the tracking problem by using a pair of cameras. You were talking about how HTC is getting around the tracking problem by using interferometry with lasers from these guys up here. And then you have other VR headsets like the Gear or just any shell for like an iPhone that just use the accelerometers within the phone in order to track the head movements. And I guess that's the difference between like, you know, outward looking and inward looking tracking. What advantage do you get currently from a big rig like this? It seems like all the stuff that I've done with the Gear VR or with any kind of shell for the iPhone, as long as your feet are planted, as long as you're not, you know, moving your body in the room but staying in one place, it's pretty good in terms of like the refresh rate when you turn your head, for example.
So with the cameras like that, you can move around, you can turn around, you can do whatever, and it will track you very well, especially if you have the two cameras on either side of you like the Vive does. The the problem with a single camera with the PlayStation VR is that, you know, we have a throwing game. So if you go back like this and the controller goes behind your head, it goes out of tracking. Well, right, but the camera also, you have much better freedom of movement. You don't have to keep your feet planted, for example. Even with the PlayStation.
All right, let's get the Spark teaser in so you can see what's been occupying Ken for the past 12 months? 16 months? This is going to be fun. We do eSports as part of the GGDA, so we represent Hi-Rez with Paladins and Smite and Blue Mammoth with Brawlhalla. This is something I'm looking forward to becoming the physical version of eSports. Excellent. All right. Thanks, everybody. My next panel is going to be 8:30 p.m. tomorrow. It's the Busted video. Or, I'm sorry, not Busted. It's 10 Rules of Doing Police Encounters. You may know how to deal with police, but your friends don't, so bring them here.
Thank you, everyone.